Greetings, Sirenauts, and welcome to this week's episode of Observation. I'm your host, Sovereign Sire. As usual, I'm brought to you by the good people at julieland.com. My guest today is Sarah Schaefer. She's a comedian. Comedian. Mm-hmm. She's a funny person. As always, Richard Avery is also here moderating things, keeping them under control.
I am moderating things. That's my job. Keep an eye on things. Make sure things don't get out of hand.
Today's topic is the wonder of Sarah.
Hello.
So I followed you on Twitter. I thought you were funny.
Thank you. My Twitter's not that good right now because I'm not on it. I'm paying someone to do it for me. Not write tweets for me.
But,
that was about to be amazing.
No, I wish. I have a writing staff.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be way more famous if I did that. But I needed a break from the constant refreshing of Twitter and Instagram and
yes,
all the things that go along with that. There's so many elements of Twitter that are negative for me, like comparing myself to other people.
Yes.
The pressure of writing something and then numbers start to mean something like, well, that didn't get enough favorites, so I'm not good enough.
Right.
Like that was happening in my brain, and I'm not cut out for Twitter. I'm witty. Come on.
But not that witty.
I'm not that witty. No, that's not my medium. Like I don't write one-liners, and that's what Twitter is for a comedian. And I love the things I love about Twitter are like I've learned so much about other people from Twitter, about other types of people and like just social issues, like the links to articles and like things like that. Like it has really expanded my mind. Like, seriously.
I have a rule with Twitter with my girls and everybody I know, basically. I always say like, you do Twitter, have fun with it, but at least once a day, tweet something that is kind of informative or educational.
Yeah.
So you can tweet all the selfies you want and be smart ass and be angry, but throw something out there that is, and I try to do that myself. Every time I read some article, I post it or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, that sharing of information to me is the positive, but I've learned that I can get that information from other places and I know my sources for that and I can still keep tabs on what's going on, but I just had to get off of it. And so I'm not writing a lot on Twitter right now, but I discovered a new app which is bubbling up now called Periscope, which is like live streaming. And that is, I think, maybe more me because it's me just freeform talking, being in my on the road, being in my hotel room, like dancing around in front of the camera, like just trying to make people laugh in the way that I know how to.
Yeah.
Right.
And that has been more satisfying. And I'm removed from Twitter and I'm getting the feedback I'm getting is overwhelmingly more positive, and it's not in a feed of people.
Yeah.
I'm not comparing myself to everyone else.
Right.
It's right now. I'm sure it will become a monster eventually and take over my life.
I just downloaded it 2 weeks ago.
Do you feel like as a comedian with all of all the options that you have now to sort of get yourself out there.
Yeah.
It's like, can you imagine if it like 10 years ago trying to,
you know, I think about
trying to get your, I mean, like I find out about so many comedians through Twitter or YouTube, you know, it's like
a completely different playing field now.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I've learned is that it doesn't change. It doesn't make it easier overall. In some ways it makes it more complex and confusing because making it in comedy is so, there's no set way to do it, especially now because of what you just said, there's so many different options of like getting yourself out there and different ways to be funny and different mediums. But there's no set way and you have to just like fumble around in the dark for a while and just hope that you get noticed. And
what is making it when you say like making it, like what do you
making
think
a living on it? You know, And your definition of that can be different depending on the person. You know, my first job that wasn't what I would consider a day job was I hosted like a show for AOL.
Uh-huh.
I interviewed bands and celebrities and it was like my own little MTV VJ gig. And I was just did my thing. And that was in 2007. So that was
AOL, you know, was still around then?
Yeah, it was. And they were trying, that was right when YouTube was getting big. And it was like everyone was trying to figure out online video. What is it? How do we do it? Literally. And now it's like still being figured out of like, how do we
make money off of it?
How do we make money off it? In the beginning, it was just like, how do we actually do it? And how do we get people to see it?
Yeah.
And AOL dipped into that world and was producing all different types of shows. And mine was like a music interview show. And we made like hundreds of videos. I interviewed so many bands, like so many up and coming, like, and now they're like massively famous. Like, it was a crazy time. But that was when I was like, okay, I'm now a comedian. Like, I'm making it as, I'm not working a day job. But that got canceled and I had to go back to my day job.
But that's, I think I've said that for years as a photographer. I say, when you start making money, that's success in a sense. When you start making money doing what you love,
yeah.
That's when it all like changes. Like that's as opposed to like having side jobs doing whatever you do.
Well, then there's the level of, which is now what I'm striving to achieve, which is stability.
I was just going to say, like,
because that's the hard everything part. Is still really unsure, you know,
Join the club.
You know, I'm getting used to it, but it's you. Whenever I get asked for advice, I mean, my first thing is like, you just have to be ready for a massive amount of ups and downs. You know, on minute by minute, you will be on 1 minute, you will be like on the top of the world, and then literally then 60 seconds later, you will be crying on the floor, you know, like,
well, that's why I've said it for years, being in this town as long as I have and worked in this town as long as I have, that I always say to everybody, like, you never want to get, that's why I don't get excited anymore. People laugh at me. You never get excited. Why would I? Cause you don't want to get up here. Cause then you got to go down
here. Part of the crash.
So I said, you want to live a life like this.
Yeah. Just a
not little, like this. Like
ripples.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's good. I just want $1 million. Great. Mm. Now I've got, then you get down low. Oh, I got to pay taxes on this. Then you get back up. Oh, but I'm going to have some money to spend.
It's always something.
Yeah.
It's like making it more difficult than you thought it would be or not. Yeah. It's never what you think. And
we just talked about that a little bit ago,
you know, it never really, you know what it, but I've, for me, it just feels to me, you know, I'm sure there on the, if there was, I'm sure there are some people that look at me and don't think this, but for me, compared to my peers and just in my life, I've felt that every single thing I've gotten, I just clawed my way up to it. I mean, like, just nothing has come easy. It has been a fight. I have been rejected from, I've never done it the way you're supposed to do it because they won't let me.
Right.
You know, like, they're like, oh, you got to get a spot on a late night show. You got to do Conan or Letterman or, you know, and I have been rejected from those things over and over again. But I got my own talk show.
Yeah.
So, like, I got my own show. How do you know? Like, I made those things happen somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you deal with, like, demoralization when those things, like being rejected for things like that? Because I know even just in my own, just even in porn, like, there are still little things that can be, like, prestige things to get, a box cover for a certain company.
The feather in your cap.
Yeah, you know, there's things that it's, like, and it's the same situation where it's, like, you know, like, just feeling, like, something I thought would be an easy sell or someone I thought would hire me, no problem. And then like, there's companies I've like never worked for. And it's like, it is like this weird demoralizing, like, why am I like,
I never, nobody loves me. Shot. Nobody cares.
Last week I have like amazing things happening in my career right now. And I have other things that aren't going the way I want them to. And last week I got rejected from something and it's ridiculous. I deserve it. I belong in that group, and I'm, you know, but I also wasn't, I just wasn't expecting it. I have gatekeeper repellent like all over me. I don't know what it is, but like, but anyway, I didn't get it. And I've become more numb to some of it. Like I used to be, I would just completely crumble anytime I got any rejection at all. And now I have grown a thicker skin. I mean, but it's still really thin. I mean, I am, because I can't be a comedian the way that I am and have a thick skin. I mean, I am completely vulnerable on stage. I don't have a persona. It's who I am. When I'm being my funniest, it's truly like, it's like, I for me, it feels like I'm being translucent in a way. Like,
honest.
I'm showing truly the inside of me. Of my soul,
right?
When I'm performing, and that's why I like Periscope, because I'm on camera, just like in my hotel room, just being like, and people are like, show your tits, and I'll do something that is like the opposite of what they want, I'll be like, yeah. And I'll like pull my shirt out and I'm like, look, there they are, you know, like, and I just, that's who I am. And like, so for me to have a thick skin against these other things would dull what I'm trying to do. So I don't want to become numb to stuff, but to deal with rejection and, setbacks, you know, I go, okay, that didn't work out. And then I get this like tingle, like where I'm like, all right, write something.
Like, I'm kind of the same way. Like, you know, if I start to feel rejected in one way, I'll be like, okay, like what do I have control of?
What can I actually work on right now?
Yeah.
There's so little control of things in this business. The great thing that's happening, right? I have two big things happening, which I can't even really publicly talk about yet. But,
don't tell the secrets.
But I won't tell you the things I don't want to tell you. But I can say there's two TV shows in development. One is just getting started at the you know, pilot phase, pilot presentation, whatever. I don't know.
Sizzle reel. Terms.
Yeah, a sizzle. No, something that you a network has said yes to the idea.
Okay.
And
that's a good start.
That's very exciting. And but it took forever to. I mean, and I don't know anything. Like,
we're just thinking, I love the people in this town. Like, it took forever. Like, it took me a week to get this. Like, you know, like,
well, I know.
Because I've met people like that. Right, like, oh, yeah. Oh, I've been in town for a week now, and I just signed a show. Like,
I know someone recently that said, was like, I saw her giving advice, and she's like, yeah, you got to really, like, put in the time, you know? And, like, you know, 3 months. I lived in New York, and 3 months, I had to work in a temp job. And I'm like, what? 3 months?
Are you kidding me?
And then I just made it. You know? Yeah, I'm like, what? No, I. Oh. But, yeah, I I think then that's fine for those people. Like, they have their own set of problems, you know?
Yeah.
I need to believe that.
How do you spend all that money?
Sure, though, when you make it too early, or when you get validation, not too early. There's no such thing as too early or too late. That implies a normal.
Yeah.
But if you get validation or success young, I think that what that creates is a lack of later, like
reality.
Well, yeah, and the crash is harder when things don't, because things are going to go bad, you know, like either way.
Yeah, but my example for years was when I would meet a band, and they first record, they would sell 15 million records. And then after that,
oh, the second record goes, is always,
500,000. Then after that, they're gone. Like, it's like, where do you go after 15 million? There is no 20. There is no 30. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Nothing is ever going to go perfectly for everyone. Yeah.
Same thing. Like,
time.
All of a sudden, you have a show that's a big hit. And I have plenty of actor friends that have done shows for 5, 6, 7 seasons. And thank God they saved their money and stuff like that. But now it's like they're screaming for attention or anything. And it's like, sorry, it's done. You have this window.
Yeah. So it's almost like, the things that have gone well for me, I've just, because it was so hard for me to get there, when I'm there, I have to work. I don't have to work. I just am more grateful for it than people who got stuff too early. And
I agree.
You know, I think that they, so that's why I say people who are like seemingly getting stuff early on, they have their own set of issues that they're going to be dealing with.
Right.
And they, you know, I have been around. It's like almost like I have more faith than a young star, you know, because I'm like, if I got this after this long and toiling away and completely being told no over and over again, then I'm going to be fine for the rest of my life. Like, I am not afraid of losing it because I never had it to begin with.
You know?
You know, but yeah, this TV project, it's like I came up with the idea a year ago. It took forever to get all the pieces in place, and then you pitch it, and then you get offers, and then you make a negotiation, which takes so long. And then, you know, finally now it's like that is moving forward, but I have very little control over it right now because I don't know what the future holds, because it's like they have to get all the things signed. Yeah. And then you can have a conversation. It's like I'm getting married and I can't see the groom. Like, let me talk to them. Like, no, the lawyers have to figure it out. I'm like, this is all just hypothetical. They may never even, like, it may go nowhere, but they have to figure out the, like, 20-year plan now.
Yeah.
Which is,
that's why, you know. That's one of the reasons why I tell people why I created the Julie Land universe, is because I don't answer to anybody. And I always say I pay a price for that. very expensive rice. But I love the fact that I can do whatever I want. And if my girls have something to say, I usually just ignore them and say, yeah. You know, but I do what I want. And I always say, if you don't like it, don't look at it.
It's the sense of control is
it's the things you can control.
What is your ambition? Like when you started, was your ambition just to do stand up, or was your ambition always to come in and be like a comedy writer, or to be
my ambition, you know, was to host a talk show.
Like from the time you were like a little baby girl.
No, I hadn't figured that out. It was all very nebulous for a while. And then after college was when I honed in on the actual dream. And when I went to New York, I just wanted to do comedy. I wasn't exactly sure what. I always in my mind was like, I think I'd be good at hosting a show. Like when I was now looking back, you know, even though I couldn't pinpoint it, when I was growing up, I loved nothing more than to get out the like VHS camcorder and pretend I was hosting not even a comedy show, but just like, this is a cooking show. And I would make it funny, even though I didn't recognize that's what I was doing. And so when I got to New York, I was like, I'll try sketch, I'll try stand up, I'll try improv, I'll do anything and everything I can possibly do. And then gradually honed in on stand up.
What was it like at the New York scene when you got there? Was it easy? Was it hard? Was it accepting? Was it welcoming?
It was really hard. A lot of people nowadays will say start stand up in a smaller town, at least get your feet wet in a smaller market, a smaller community that is supportive.
Get humiliated somewhere small.
Right. Break yourself in.
Yeah.
And then go to New York or LA or Chicago, you know, so that you don't humiliate. Right. So I didn't know that. I didn't even do any research. Like, I mean, this was in 2001 when I moved to New York. So it wasn't like I was, there weren't podcasts that I knew about of like every single comedian doing what I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were books like Steve Martin's book. Still haven't read that. You know, people get mad at me when I say that. I'm like, I don't know. I just didn't research it. Had never even seen stand up in person. Wow. I'd only seen it on TV. So I went to New York just sort of on a whim, and it was very difficult in the beginning. I was so afraid to even, because, you know, I took an improv class at UCB. I had a friend from my college sketch group. I was in a sketch comedy group in college who was there. And we were trying to write stuff together. And that didn't really work out. And in the beginning, it was, you know, some of the initial advice I would get from people was go and hang out at comedy shows and get to know the other comedians. That's how you get time on stage. And I mean, aside from open mics and, you know, things like that. And so that part was really hard for me because it involved being social. And that is really introducing yourself, networking at age 23, you know, like I was not.
Hi,
I want to be you. Give me something. Like I hate doing the salesmanship thing. Like, you know, now I can do that type of stuff, but like, I don't like it. But back then I like would go to a show. I would look up in Time Out New York or Village Voice what were the shows that had the stars next to them that were recommended critics pick. And I would go to those shows and I would go with the intention of introducing myself. And sometimes I would just go and turn around and just leave because I was so afraid. Just as an audience member, I was afraid that they would know that I wanted to be a comedian and make fun of me.
They're like, groupie.
Right.
Like,
in other words, not welcoming. Exactly. No, it was a time, it was right when the alt comedy scene was like kind of in its heyday, like of the Janine Garofalo and the David Cross. And those people had just gone on and gotten famous. And then there was, you know, those people, their peers like Todd Barry and Eugene Merman. And these are people that when I moved to New York City were like gods, you know, on the local scene. And like, you wanted nothing more than to be around those people. And it's not, they're nice. I know them all now. And like, they were friendly to each other, but at the time being in my position, I felt very unwelcome and I felt, but that could have been my own fear, you know,
insecure?
Yeah, exactly. My own insecurity.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't blame them. Like, I was just like, how do I get on this show? And they'd be like, who are you? You know? So,
and you are, and you're with.
But I figured it out tiny step by tiny step.
And but I've heard these kind of stories for years in this town, whether it's comedians, actors, musicians. And I always say this journey that you're taking is so much more rewarding than if you did come out of college and got some show. And I don't know. I find what you're doing. Yeah. It's the same thing for me as a photographer. It's been, nothing's come easy for me, nothing. And I just, when you stop and you think about it, you get to appreciate it more. And then you, when you do get the success you're looking for, you will appreciate it that much more.
Well, and I think there's more depth to what you do when you do get there.
And all this experience that you bring to any job that you do now, whatever it is, writing, performing, you have so much.
Yes, you're better wisdom. At it. Yeah. When Nikki and I got our show at MTV, I felt I had, at that point, been working in a job nonstop for 10 years. And I, some of it was in the business, some of it wasn't. And I had worked at Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. I knew what a talk show involved. And I was prepared. I felt confident about like, okay, I know the schedule. I know this, the, what this, I, you know, nothing can prepare you for the whole experience of all of that all at once. But, I felt prepared and I felt, I think I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And I feel proud of that experience because of that. And what I learned from that, then I will take to the next thing. And I think that, you know, it is, you're on a, instead of feeling like you're standing on a, like a flimsy bridge over a canyon, you know, that's going to collapse anytime. I have a mountain underneath me and I have to remember that now. I'm like, I'm not like, I always compare it to like Manhattan. When I look at Manhattan, I'm like, how is it staying up? I like don't understand geography. I'm like, how is it staying up? It's on water. Like, what if everything just fell? Cause I'm imagining it's on like that. The ocean is so deep next to it. No, it's on the top of a huge hill. Yeah. Like, it's fine. It's not going to crash down. I just have, that's me being really stupid when it comes to science. But but that's how I feel about my career is like, you know, I've put in all these things and built all these steps and I'm stable. It's okay. Like, you know.
You sound like most comedians I know.
Well, like I, in interviewing comedians and stuff, the things that have surprised me is that there's like this system, like this whole idea that people come out of Harvard and then go right into like writers' rooms.
There's that. Like, there's so many like that. Avenues,
like, I don't know why that surprised me. But I was like, really? Because I just don't think of comedy as something that you learn at Harvard.
The Harvard thing to me.
Can you imagine going to your mom and dad? I'm majoring in comedy. What? And how much am I spending for that education?
There's different pockets of that. There's the Comedy Cellar in New York City, which is like the best club to be in at. And if like, if you're a regular there, that puts a stamp on you of like good stand-up comedian. And Harvard has that same, like though, if you wrote for the Lampoon, like good comedy writer. And I saw that happen at like Fallon, you know, they would be hiring writers and they hired a few, there were people from the Lampoon and some of them were incredibly talented. And then some of them were like, you know, like it's more just flash than substance. But, and those, the people who didn't have the substance wouldn't last.
Of course.
You know, and that, you know, they'd churn through some people in the beginning, just figuring out who was, who building that team, you know, and that's, I after having my own show and hiring writers, Nikki and I purposely did it a different way because we had dealt with being on the other side of it a lot and of submitting to be a writer on a show.
That makes a difference. Mm-hmm. You have that experience.
Yeah. And we, intentionally did it so that, it was blind. So we didn't know the names of the people who were on, of the packets of jokes and stuff. And, it was really interesting. Like I was like so curious, like how many of the people, cause we gave every packet a grade. And at the end we all got together and we were like, all right, everyone who got an A, let's talk about that packet. And then we did like we had a board where we were like, okay, number 18, put it in the yes column. And like, you know, it was interesting how we all gravitated towards the same people. We had different ones that we liked more, but it was just so clear who was the most talented. When you removed all the ego from it, all the networking connection, it was obvious who was the most talented. So we had those people up on the board, and then we revealed who they were. And I was, because you're not going to hire someone you can't stand.
right.
You know, like there is that element. You can't be a jerk, you know, like, I mean, you can. Some people want to work with jerks. But we were, you know, we wanted to make sure these were people we wanted to work with. Right. And so we reveal the names of like the top 20 people. And it was so interesting to see like gender breakdown was 50-50. Just
I was going to ask, I was like, did you guys try to consciously include more women or?
Anyone who wanted to submit, we let them submit, you know, and then agents submitted their clients and we did, you know, anyone, I just had a policy of like, if someone on Twitter asked me, can I submit to be a writer on your show? Why not? Yeah. Who cares? What's the worst that could happen? Yeah. You don't get hired? Like you need to get used to that experience, yeah, exactly. You know?
That's what I say to everybody.
So it was 50-50 gender breakdown.
50-50 gender breakdown. I wish there was more diverse racially, but I don't know if that was just, you know, like, I don't know. I sought out as many, like, just so we were like, you
so
know.
The majority of them were Eskimos and the rest were white?
Yeah. It was all Japanese for some reason.
Exactly.
No. But in the end, I felt so confident. And it wasn't, when I say I wish it was more racially diverse, I think the whole pool of people that submitted was mostly white. And even though I definitely like, you know, was like looking up, you know, I mean, I was like affirmative actioning it. I was like, all right, let's make sure we have like a diverse pool of people submitting, you know? And that was an interesting experience of like realizing, well, I at least I got like half women. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a step that
was there anything in the reveal that surprised you, like people you knew or didn't?
Oh, like, yeah. Or, I mean, like, what surprised me the most about the whole process was how stupid some people are in terms of the mistakes they would make in their packet, you know, like, of why are you submitting this in all caps? You read like a serial killer,
right?
You know, like in big font, like every joke written in all. I mean, I guess they thought that was script format or something, but this was just very loose. There was no, you know, this is for a late night show. You're just writing jokes or ideas, and like it just was weird, or like horrible typos, or not knowing how to spell my name, or like, you know, and my Sarah is spelled two ways plus probably, but just little things like that, like attention to detail. It's like if you really wanted this job, you would have at least had someone check this for you, you know. Or like a tiny font that's like hard to read, you know, like just stuff like that. I was like, there's simple
but
steps
can
you
I
can
tell
take.
I'm like you. I think that's so obvious, but I am amazed when I'm young people today that don't even know how to write.
Right.
Not just they can communicate, but like they don't know how to format. I'm helping a friend kind of create a blog right now, and she doesn't even know how to write in a proper, you know, with whatever.
So some people,
like, where were you in school? Like,
well, if you want to be a writer, you should probably figure that. And also, we're reading so many packets. It's like the moment you do something that makes it harder for me to get your jokes, then you've distracted me now. And
whole
I don't
page
care.
For a punchline.
I had the same experience. I was, I'm a writer, and then I went to a creative writing program, and then I was a judge on the Phil Levine Prize. And so I was reading poetry packets, and it was like, I had like a very similar experience where it's like, you think like, oh, I'm not very good, this, this, and that. And then you like, you get in packets from other people that are doing what you're doing.
And you're like,
and you're like,
step ahead of the
everybody's,
game.
I'm not that bad. Yeah. I'm like, at least I'm not basic. All right. Like I'm not a fucking peasant.
Well,
I knew not to handwrite my submission.
A huge wake up call for me too was, that we, you know, we gave people a, like a loose out, like write, just cause we want to be able to compare, you know, like write jokes about just, you know,
like
stuff in the headlines.
Like or, a topic.
Yeah. These topics or whatever. And I would tell you almost everybody's jokes, some jokes were verbatim the same because your brain goes to the same place. And so my advice to people submitting to like, especially a monologue writer type where you're writing jokes, topical jokes, is just assume that the first angle you come up with is the one that you are not original.
Yeah.
Everyone is going to come up with that same angle. Go to the next.
Yeah, don't
go to the next angle.
You don't go to the obvious one.
Right. But you think that's what I realized. Yeah. Like, you know, when you see how many people were submitting the same jokes, it was like, oh, okay. So this is, we are not original people. Like, you know, and you see that on Twitter. I mean, when stuff happens in the news, I see comedians making the same essential jokes over and over again. And so I think with Twitter now, it's kept people more on their toes. Like, oh, I needed to go to the second or third thought instead of immediately going to that first one.
Well, do you think it's like, in some ways, I feel like Twitter makes it so, I mean, I mainly use my Twitter to tell jokes. And like, is there something about like sort of authentic, like, I feel like it's very easy. Like I can go on and like, I can sort of write a Sovereign Sire joke. Like, without being, like, on.
Yeah.
Like, because it's, like, Twitter's kind of created this format in which it's very much like what you're saying. It's, like, that kind of group, like, group consciousness or, like, group think where, like, everyone's sort of...
Yeah.
There's, like, a way to write, like, this snappy, like...
Oh, yeah. You see,
like,
trends
it's
in
almost,
Twitter.
Like, demystified the joke writing process.
Yeah. You see trends in Twitter starting where it's, like, oh, now this is a funny thing to do on Twitter is you do this, you know?
Right, right. Like, they're almost like memes, but they're a little bit more sophisticated.
It's like zeitgeisty. It's trends. It's trends in comedy writing.
Right. Yes. That, I guess that's what I was getting at. It's like, so do you feel like the authenticity has kind of, like, gone away?
But what bothers me on Twitter, though, is we kind of came full circle here, is that people that aren't funny think they're funny because they write some witty thing and they do it a lot. Like, there's certain people that just annoy the fuck out of me because they think they're funny, and I just want to say to them, you're not funny.
Well,
stop trying to be
some
funny.
Some people are really good at Twitter and like they legit can make me laugh.
Name one. President Obama. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah.
He's hilarious.
The NSA, no. what is it? The CIA was like writing funny tweets. It's like, oh, don't do that. No, I don't know. I feel like they're...
Yeah, I'm just thinking the NSA, like, I'm not funny. I'm not trying to be funny. But like the fact that like a couple years ago they were writing jokes, we're listening to you and we're like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
But now we realize, like, oh, it was true.
Yeah. I think that...
I'm just saying...
Twitter can be dangerous for someone who thinks it... If you just want to be good at Twitter, then there's nothing wrong to do. Just keep doing it.
Yeah.
But if you want to be a stand-up, Twitter, and you rely too much on Twitter as your gauge, that's a problem. Because being live in front of an audience is is completely different.
Exactly.
And getting up and reading tweets doesn't work for everyone. I don't think it works for anyone. I think that, you know, I've very rarely had a joke that originated on Twitter, but I'm not that kind of comedian. Some people are one-liner people and that's what they do.
Wasn't there like, there was like one person, a comedian that got really famous on Twitter and then his stand-up was like not that great.
I don't know.
Richard Pryor?
No.
Carlin. I'm thinking of that, like that. Yeah. It was like sort of this example of someone that like kind of blew up on Twitter because their tweets were, they were kind of comedy Twitter, but also like weird Twitter.
There's people who got a lot of fame from Twitter because they found their medium. It's like you found what you were good at and embrace it. I have no problems with that. But it's not a tit for tat, you know, just because that's why when I get frustrated with Twitter sometimes, because I think people now expect you. Well, you're supposed to be funny. Why aren't you funny on Twitter? And it's like, if you're judging me on my Twitter, then you are not getting the clear picture.
Well, I always try to imagine like someone like Stuart Lee. I don't know if you know who that is, but he's a comedian that's like very, like, I always try to imagine
very
like...
Very lonely?
A very long form.
Oh. I was like,
he's
lonely?
Very long
what?
Form.
That poor guy.
But I always imagine like if he was on Twitter, like people would think he was... awful, but he's considered like one of, at least in England, but like he's sort of unknown, but people that know, it's like he's considered like incredibly funny, like just amazing, no one can do what he does, kind of comedian and it's like, but on a format like Twitter he would come up like there was, it'd be a, and that's why he doesn't have one. It's like he's like, I just couldn't do it.
I think that's it's like why I can't I've be taken a step back from it.
It's like, because I can't be funny in 142 characters.
You have to come see me. That's just how this works. You know, or you have to experience the things that I put out that are, you know, not Twitter. It's just not, you know. And I have people, well, you are funny at Twitter, and it's like, not up to my standard, you know. But anyway,
it's crazy.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap things up, because that was we've been at it
covered
for a while. We've been talking for a long time. Mm-hmm. Anyway, would you like to plug anything? Would you like to tell them where to find you?
I have my first stand-up comedy album came out
Very funny. I listened to it last
March.
Night.
Yay. and it is called Chrysalis, and you can get it on all the Amazons and the iTunes.
I got it on iTunes myself.
Oh, thank you. And I'm very proud of that. So take a listen. And I tour sometimes, and it's on my website, sarahschaefer.com.
How do you spell your last name? Because some people are not going to...
Luckily, you can misspell my name in Google, and it comes to me, because I'm the most famous Sarah Schaefer. Sarahschaefer.com, SarahSchaefer.com.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
And my dear Sirenauts, you know where to find me on Twitter at SovereignSire. And you can find me on my lovely website, ilovesov.com. It's amazing. Thank you to the Richard Avery for making it all happen.